This episode is brought to you by Amicus Search and Recruitment. If you're seeking a new role in accounting, finance, or tax in Ireland, Amicus can help. They've been building careers for over 10 years and are a great supporter of this podcast. You can find out more at amicus.ie and find your next finance role today.
This week we're going to be talking about the examiner's report from December 2024. And in this, the examining team share their observations from the marking process to highlight strengths and weaknesses in candidates' performance and to offer constructive advice for those sitting the exam in the future. And let's have a look at the Advanced Tax Examiner's Report from December 2024. I will just start by saying that the highest mark in Ireland for the Irish Advanced Tax paper was 80%, which is a fairly respectable mark, don't get me wrong. But for the June sitting, it was, I think, about 94%. So it just goes to show from sitting to sitting, some exams can be trickier than others. Now, let's kick off with his general comments. And his general comments were, first of all, he spoke about the euro sign. Now, there is an issue, just a tiny little thing. It's only a technical thing in the advanced tax exam that sometimes it can be tricky to find the euro sign. Don't worry about it, he's saying. You won't be penalised if you don't use the currency sign. Don't worry about it at all. Now, obviously, for different exams, it'll be different where, you know, you might have some currency conversion, so you would need to use it. But in the advanced tax exam, it's no big deal, he's saying, so relax. And the other thing he's saying is, and he has said this a few times, is when you're using the Excel function, I'll call it, don't embed your calculations into a cell so that he has to go and click on the cell and look at your calculations. You need to approach it as if you're writing a letter to a client. So if you're writing a letter to a client, which you are required to do in question one, a letter or a memo or whatever, they want to see where your working has come from. You can't have them hidden and just say, oh, and the answer is 2 million. They want to know that you've added 1 million and another million, and that gave you the 2 million. So he has said that time and time again. So pay attention to what he says. He's trying to help us. Okay, I'm going through this now. I'm just picking out the areas that I think were, well, it's all valuable, but areas that I think are particularly valuable. Now, question one, very well tipped, was incorporation relief. Very few candidates recognised the application of entrepreneur relief, and a few students got mixed up and they thought that Pierce was a limited company and not a sole trader. So watch out for that. And that's just, I think, probably lack of practice maybe in that area. The other area is in the ethical issues. Now, ethical issues, as you know, hasn't been around that long. He said that many candidates just listed in bullet points all the principles in the ethical guide, all of them. Just said, here you go. So reproduced it all back to him, but didn't correctly identify which particular part of the ethical standards were breached. And in this case, it was integrity. He also mentions the misuse of the term tax avoidance instead of tax evasion. And he said that was widespread. And he says, please note, there is a big difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance. So do look at your ethical guide. It's all about the application of it. He also mentions there's a confusion between the reliefs, the conditions for retirement relief and entrepreneur relief. Don't get them mixed up. It's easy for me to say, now how would you do that? It's all about the conditions. But a lot of this exam is to do with knowing your conditions really, really well and trying not to get them mixed up. Entrepreneur relief is a newer relief to retirement relief. And try and get you the conditions straight in your mind. There are techniques available, and I'm sure whoever your lecturer is, that they will tell you what techniques to use for that. He also mentions that he's asked for some exit strategies and how he does give very good steers in the question as to how the taxpayer could exit the company. How do we recognize the examiner steers? So he leads us on like a merry path in his questions. And the way you can, and he gives really good steers as well, is to practice his questions. Practice his questions. He writes a very well-crafted question. They're absolutely fabulous. So the only way you can see his steers and find his steers is to get going as soon as possible. And also, when I talk about get going as soon as possible, that also applies to knowing your conditions off by heart. So don't leave it till, gosh, week four, say, before you start learning your conditions, because you'll get overwhelmed. There are so many conditions to learn and you need to overlearn them. Question one, still on question one, he asked us to write a letter, and some students wrote a memorandum. Not quite sure why they would do that. So make sure you read the requirements, because that's just throwing away marks, isn't it? And I don't know why how this crept into the exam in December. Some candidates gave a very long introduction to the letter, listing all the things they were going to do. What I always say to my students is, in the introduction, get in and get out as quick as you can. Don't be given big, long introduction. So that was very surprising that crept in December. Other than that, he says it was very well answered. So that's great. Well done, everybody. Now, question two. Question two was sound group. It was a group and vision PLC. It was a 25 mark question. Now, there was group trading losses. You need to know about VAT registration and dividends being received and dividend income. So what did he say about this one? This was the one that wasn't well answered. You know, every sitting, there's always a question that he says, look, it wasn't as well answered as it could have been. For example, we're talking about the December 24 sitting. In the June 24 sitting, it was the question one that he said, you know, could have been answered better. But anyway, so he said that he was surprised that a lot of students thought that capital losses could be transferred intra-group. So even if they are in a capital group, the beauty of being in a capital group is that you can transfer assets between group members and it doesn't trigger a chargeable gain. That's the beauty of it, really. It's not that they can transfer, that they can utilize each other's capital losses. So that was a little bit of a rookie error. He was very happy that students knew about group VAT registration, and that again was very well tipped to come up. But he said the majority, now here we go, the majority of candidates were not aware that group registration does not apply to intergroup property sales. So VAT on property cannot be disregarded when it's a VAT group. So remember that. When we get a mistake in the question, or where we've misread, or we don't know something, for example, when we don't know that capital losses can't be transferred intra-group, that has implications for our professional marks. So it's like a double whammy. So we don't get the commercial acumen marks, unfortunately. So the professional marks, if you know your stuff, well then you'll automatically hoover up all the professional marks. But if you automatically, it's fantastic. But if you don't, that's a pity. Now, he also goes on to say, we're still on question two, that he said was a little bit disappointing. And he said that, in particular, what was disappointing, that very few candidates recognised that it was a close company. And because we didn't recognise that, you didn't recognise that there'd be a close company surcharge. And I'm going to read out exactly what he says here. He said, the area of close companies is regularly examined, and he's absolutely correct. It is. Do not ever leave it out. And he said, past questions focused on identification of close companies and computations of surcharges and identification of tax consequences of certain transactions. So even if it's not a full-blown question, in other words, he'd always bring in a bit about a little bit of a close company. Maybe there's interest paid to a director, or maybe there are transfer of assets at undervalue and the like, that kind of thing. But he said, this question examined basic principles in a different style to prior questions, and many candidates did not adapt to this. That's okay. We can go in and adapt to it. We can go in and look at this question and make sure that we include that in our study for the future sittings. So again, it's unfortunately that it was a double whammy, because if you didn't pick up that it was a close company, well, then you couldn't pick up your analysis and evaluation marks, which is part of your professional marks. Now, question three, I was absolutely delighted to see a partnership question. Delighted, because it was long overdue. Now, this was a 25 mark question, and it examined the various income tax implications of a sole trader admitting an experienced employee, David. And you know what? This is similar, sounds very similar to a previous question that he would have asked. And also, there was advice in relation to capital acquisition tax in various transactions, including foreign assets. There was disclaimers and interest-free loans in this question. Giving a plug to this podcast, but there is a podcast that we've done on partnerships, and everything was covered in there. When you admit a partner, you know, you have your commencement rules. If a partner leaves, there's cessation rules. And from your lower level paper, you need to be able to cope with that. Now, he said that performance was generally good, with most candidates achieving at least half of the available marks. However, he said that for the cessation calculations, that students, you just need to practice that a little bit. So of all of the areas in the lower down paper, what he generally examines the most at the advanced tax level would be commencement cessation. He loves the lower down VAT stuff, and particularly it could come in a revenue audit question. What he won't examine you on, well, my God, who am I to say what he will or won't examine you on? But it'd be very surprising that he'd ask for a full-blown income tax computation to include universal social charge and PRSI, because that's very, very, very well examined at the lower level. However, unfortunately, some candidates did calculate that for this question three. As he says here himself, calculating income tax, universal social charge, and PRSI liabilities were not required and wasted time. And that's happened before on previous questions where he might ask, for example, he might say, what is, I think it was a Hank, who was a guy who was non-dom, but he was resident in Ireland. And you were asked to calculate his taxable income. Taxable income. Now that is different to calculating his income tax, universal social charge and PRSI. So just watch out for that. Read the question carefully. So part two of part A of this particular question, we're looking at question three. He said this was below average and a number of candidates did not attempt this, and that you were confusing partnerships with limited companies and commenting on corporation tax issues. So all that information that was required here was contained in the partnership podcast. So what I note of late as well, this one particular area here was on the commercial acumen, and he said that very few candidates obtained the commercial acumen mark for recognising the importance of checking the lease to see if subletting is permitted. So I notice in more of his previous, most recent questions that he's gone all out for the commercial acumen side of things. So when you're looking at past questions, particularly older ones where there wasn't the professional marks, have a think. What could you recommend here? What advice should you be giving on the commercial acumen side? It is super important. And I've even noted that he may even include that on the, you know, the five marks, the ethical marks in question one. So it all comes back to the, you know, this was a legal thing, but sometimes it comes back to the price of things, the cost of things. He said that the performance was on part B was very well answered. And do you know what he says time and time again, actually? He finishes with a conclusion and he says it's very important to learn the conditions of the various reliefs well. Absolutely. If there are five conditions, it is not good enough to know three or four of them. You're wasting your time, because it could be on that fifth condition that the whole question is based. So you have to learn off all of your conditions. It says that the basics of tax learned at tax level must be revised as well as the new advanced tax material that you're currently studying. For example, this paper contained a cessation calculation, which is straightforward, yet many candidates have not optimized their marks. And I think this is where really you need a steer from your lecturer, to be honest with you. I know a lot of you will have come through because you might have been exempt from the lower down tax paper. So maybe you mightn't have covered as much as the examiner might think you have. So be steered by your advanced tax lecturer as to what they are covering for you in the lower down tax paper. He says finally to read the scenario carefully and read the requirement extra carefully. And then he says, answer the requirement. So he said that three different ways. Read the scenario carefully, read the requirement extra carefully, answer the requirement. So looking at the examiner's comments is super, super important. And that's why I included the revision and answer pack that has been approved by ACCA. But if you want to have a look at it yourself, there's a link in our show notes to the examiner's comments.
Are you taking the ACCA exams this year? Struggling to memorize all the tax conditions you need? Don't worry, we've got you covered. Head to paulaburn.ie and you'll find Tax Conditions, the spoken word. High-quality audio recordings of all tax conditions required for the exams, so you can revise whenever you're on a walk, doing the laundry, wherever you happen to be, and no screen required. For only €20, you'll get access to all conditions categories required for the 2025 exam cohort, and for every purchase made, Paula makes a donation to Tree Nation on your behalf. Check the link in the show notes or head to paulaburn.ie today to grab your copy of Tax Conditions, the Spoken Word, and supercharge your revision today.